I just realized this in reading the biography of our next guest that I have a show with the same name as the show that he hosted, only his show was much more successful. And he's a best-selling author of more than 22 books. He's interviewed more than 3,000 writers for his BBC and international television and radio show, The Book Show, including the great literary names of our time. On Saturday afternoon at the Spencertown Academy's Festival of Books, they're going to feature their 2012 distinguished author, who is Frank Delaney, who will discuss his work, including the New York Times bestselling novel Ireland, a fictionalized epic history of his native country. He is a prolific author, journalist, and screenwriter. After 25 years in England, Delaney moved to the United States in 2002. He lives in Litchfield County, Connecticut, and it's a great pleasure to call him a friend and welcome him to the roundtable this morning. How are you, sir?
I was going to say, Morning Joe, but there is another show of that name.
Yes, you're right. There is. It's good to talk to you as always.
And you, Joe. Always nice to talk to you.
You going to Spencertown, going to a festival of books, and being their distinguished author, which is always, you know, very nice to talk about your work and have it recognized in such a fashion. Do you enjoy these types of conclaves?
Very much. I was invited by a distinguished editor, whom I know in New York, a man called David Highfill, who I think is on the committee at Spencertown. And Spencertown seems a very attractive festival. They seem to have got it absolutely right. What's wonderful about these events for me, Joe, is this. Criticism has disappeared. Newspapers are closing down their books pages. There's not as much informed comment on literature as there used to be. And therefore, my view that the people who really tell you whether you're any good are your readers is enhanced all the more by going to an event like this. If somebody comes up to me at one of these events and says, I liked this book, but I didn't like this, a conversation can ensue in which I learn a great deal more than I've ever learned from reading the columns of a newspaper. And I find that interchange between the readers and myself very interesting. And it has taught me something really startling in one instance. When the novel Ireland, that you were kind enough to mention, was published in 2005, I did a long tour around the United States, and I expected, because of the title and the subject matter, that the attendances at these conclaves, as you call them, which really Vaticanizes us, I expected that most of the audience would be Irish or of Irish extraction. It turned out, actually, not to be the case at all. It was at best 50-50, because the thing that unites everybody that was evident in that book and the people wanted to talk about is story and storytelling. And that's a theme of Saturday afternoon's conclave in Spencertown.
When you look at that storytelling, which is so much a part of the Irish tradition, so obviously you come by that honestly.
Yes, but so do countless millions of others. On that tour, and every day since, I hear from one way and another, people from Indonesia, people from Latin America, where there's a very strong domestic storytelling tradition. And you can always tell this by the fact that soap opera, which derives from it directly, is huge in Latin America. There are storytellers, traveling storytellers, still practicing in China and in Indonesia. The Scandinavian sagas, I still read them. They still occupy my time. The underpinning of so much of what we see on the screen is legendary and mythological anyway, and comes from told story. The great literature we have has come down one way and another from story, from things that were told around the fire. And you know this yourself, Joe. If you want to capture someone's attention, you slide into your chair opposite them at lunch, you're slightly late, and you say, boy, have I got a story for you.
Right.
Have you got their attention then? Totally.
Your most recent novel is The Last Storyteller, a novel of Ireland, which I assume, did that come out of that experience of going across the country and talking about Ireland?
I was on a theme anyway. I was on a theme of storytelling, which is important to me, and it will always will be important. I'm moving away from it as a theme as such. At the moment, even though it'll always be there. And The Last Storyteller is the third, although it's a complete standalone novel. It's the third in the trilogy. about a young man whose life is changed by meeting a traveling storyteller, as indeed the boy in the novel Ireland has his life changed forever by meeting a traveling storyteller. And the last storyteller purports to show how story can actually change your life, how it can anchor you, how it can direct you, how it can steer you, and how, above all else, ignore it, trivialize it, or dismiss it at your peril. There used to be a dismissal of storytelling in writing as less than literary. I notice that it's changing. I notice now that in serious reviews, such are the ones that appear anyway, that a noted author is often complimented for having written a really good story. That wasn't always the case. So there's a recognition that story is important, and this novel, The Last Storyteller, tries to copper fasten that recognition for the people who read it.
How important is the base content? Because there are people in this world who can, and I put yourself in this category, but there are people in this world who can make going to the bank and putting a deposit in a good story, where other people, it would just be a mundane task. So there is the story, and then there is the storyteller.
Who are the great storytellers among us? The great storytellers among us, Joe, are the stand-up comics who can make going to the bank a hilariously funny and rivetingly interesting 15 minutes. The great storytellers among us are the outstanding broadcasters. Bob Costas at the Olympic Games, for example.
Right.
Some of the great baseball commentators who are telling a story all the time. It is constant storytelling. It's the most widespread folk art in the world. It's something more people can do than cannot do. My father, for example, who was a very withdrawn man, and rather a shy man, I now realize, in many ways, and a very difficult man temperamentally, was a wonderful raconteur, but not until he was well settled down in the company he was about to address. He could then start on a story that would last for half an hour about something like going to the bank, and make it completely riveting. So it's really a matter of attitude and wanting to practice it. If you really want to convey things, especially to your children, tell them a story. And it's, as I say, it's a very widespread folk art. And when you transfer it to the page, think of every writer whose work you really, truly enjoy. And there's profound storytelling somewhere at its core.
You mentioned a moment ago in your list about broadcasters and mentioned Bob Costas, who I would agree with. But you yourself being a broadcaster, it is something. Does that help in your writing of having that experience of being able to convey to an audience?
You know, it's a great question, and it's odd, almost telepathic, that you mention it, because yesterday I'm doing a novel I'm working on at the moment. Yesterday, I realized that the voice that I use in broadcasting is not at all dissimilar from the voice on the page. Part of this has come from the fact that I've read a lot of my own audiobooks.
Right.
But I now realize, as I'm sifting through a sentence, Joe, and when I'm altering it, I'm looking as much for the impact on the ear as on the eye. And somewhere between the two is, for me, the right position. I'm not saying it's the same for everybody. It wouldn't have worked for Nabokov, for example. It certainly didn't work for James Joyce, although there's a huge amount of music beneath the surface in Joyce's books because he was such a fine singer. But the experience of having broadcast, the experience of having to go into a telephone box at the site of a bomb explosion in Ireland where there are bodies lying around and get a 30-second report without a script through to the newsroom, the experience of grabbing your audience from word one, containing all the news in the first brief sentence, and then embellishing everything afterwards, it absolutely has carried over into what I do. And I'm aware that the things that I put on the page are as much for the ear as for the eye, if not more so.
And, I know, of course, I have my personality off mic, and then there is how you sound on the air. Every once in a while, when I slip into that broadcasting voice, my wife will turn to me and say, don't be Radio Joe, be Normal Joe. I don't know, does your wife Diane do that to you? Or
No, but then I've been doing it for a long, long time, and it took me years and years and years to make the two meld completely. As I am now, I'm broadcasting to you now, we are live, this is a broadcast medium.
Right.
I will be here at lunch in the office today with the people around me. I will be exactly the same, I will be no different, but that took years and years and years. And oddly, I think that the experience of having to get the voice right for the page is what taught me to bring everything together, the broadcast voice, the personal voice, the written voice, the personal voice, so that the whole thing becomes melded into one comprehensive round, like, I hope, a delicious cake of soda bread or something like that.
Mm. Is there something about, is there a similarity to hearing your voice in the headphones, of hearing that voice, your voice, broadcasting, that is similar to seeing your word on the page?
Oh, I love this question. That's absolutely the case. And as complete proof of how accurate your question is, the last thing I do before I send the book off, finally, for editing and printing, the last thing I do is I read it out loud. And that's when I make the best corrections. That's when I find the solecisms, the errors, the falsehoods, the cliches, the adverb too many, the adjective too rich. And it's because I'm hearing it in a voice that I have used to speak to one person at a time, and yet a mass market, a mass audience. That's where the truth of it lies. There's a kind of trueness, or as Stephen Colbert would say, a truthiness. There's a kind of truthiness in one's own voice, in one's own ear, that sifts through a lot of the falsehood that creeps onto the page. A lot of the posing, a lot of the look at me, which is death to a writer, and there's far too much of it around. It's the thing I fear most, that I will take up some posture on the page. Well, reading it aloud and hearing my own voice and wincing at a sentence, which I then strike or reorder or alter in some way, that's what the word voice does for you, and that's what the voice of one's ear does for me.
And that does allow you to be your own harshest critic.
It does, and you have to be. And in some ways, because of the way I was raised in a very devout Irish Catholic family with very, very firm principles of accuracy and good behavior, you are your own harshest critic anyway. But the voice you hear in your ear reading the words you have written makes you wince so often that it is, without question, the best critic you can ever have. And it also, there's a curious... This is the thing that surprises me about it, Joe, is that there's a curious objectivity that you get going that works for you when you hear it, as though you're reading it to somebody else. I imagine I'm reading it to somebody else, and that really makes me wince. And if you have an ideal audience, I was told in broadcasting years ago when I started, imagine broadcasting to somebody whom you respect and whose respect and attention you want. That's the way to broadcast. Well, that sure as hell is the way to write.
And you mentioned the audiobooks, but what is beautiful about not only your writing, but your delivery is that musicality that you mentioned earlier.
It's essential. If a book doesn't have something of the flash of poetry in it, something to excite the spirit, something to ignite you, something to make you remember that moment, a really great book, reading a really great book, is like playing a pinball machine. Mm. You shoot the ball off, and it hits a bumper, and a light goes on. Or it doesn't, and so on and so forth. And the more successful the writer, the more he has planted the lights and the bumps in the pinball machine. Reading is 50% of the bargain. The writer only does 50% of the work. I firmly believe that. The reader does the other 50%. It's one of the reasons I rarely describe people physically in full detail. I might describe a nose or ears full of hair or a lock of hair falling down on the forehead or dense horn-rimmed glasses or something like that. But I want the reader to do the rest. And I want them to bring their imagination to the page. And in the imagination, I want them to have a poetry and a musicality. I want it to be there for them, so should they choose to read a passage aloud, they will find a certain lilt within it. I think it's vital to reading. In actual fact, I read more poetry than I read any other form of literature. Mm. I have almost as many poetry books as I have biographies. And I read poetry every single day. I try to read a page of Shakespeare every day because of the great poet that he was. And I pick up his lilt and his rhythms. And this, I hope, finds its way into my books. It certainly is my intention. And if it's not there, that's my failure.
Well, it certainly is. And who wouldn't want to hear you talk for an afternoon? Saturday afternoon at 1:30, the Spencertown Academy's Festival of Books will feature their 2012 distinguished author, Frank Delaney, who will discuss his work. And you can find out more by going to the website, SpencertownAcademy.org, SpencertownAcademy.org, or also FrankDelaney.com, FrankDelaney.com, to find out more about Frank, his work, and the Festival of Books as well. Frank Delaney, it's always a pleasure, my friend. I appreciate you being with us, and great to have you in Spencertown. Thank you.
Joe, a delight, and I'm looking forward to being there.
Thank you so much. Garrison Keillor and the Writer's Almanac are next. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.